call this meeting of the House Commerce Committee to order. It is now 3 o'clock. That means it's time to start. We're, I think, one member short of having a quorum, so we will wait with the minutes, and we will jump right into the bills. We have a busy agenda today, so we're going to move as quickly as we can through our agenda. With that, we'll have a senator come up to start us off, and with Representative Gossel.
What?
Just testifying.
Okay.
Gentlemen, introduce yourselves for the tape, and whenever you're ready, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. My name is Representative Matt Grossel, and today we'll be introducing 2871 relating to liquor authorizing the issuance of an off-sale license in Hubbard County. That's a one-time one issuance for a certain business, and that's as far as it's going to go. So, just to kind of put some minds at ease, I also brought Senator Utke here to testify with the more detailed information about the bill.
That sounds good, Senator. Welcome to the committee. Please start whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I've got some prepared information here that I will go through, and then we can move on from there. But House File 2871 is a bill that will allow the Hubbard County Board to issue an off-sale liquor license to a specific off-sale liquor store located in Akeley Township. The history that has led to this bill started December 18, 2017, when Jeff and Maggie Stacy and Brian and Sarah Hollick purchased the Akeley VFW Harold Harris Post 8508 located at 31075 State Highway 34 at Akeley. The new owners purchased the property to renovate the existing building into an event center called the Red River Event Center and an off-sale liquor store. The owners contacted, applied for, and received approval for the off-sale liquor license from the Akeley Township. The next step was to apply for the liquor license with the Hubbard County Board. They again filled out the applications were approved by the Hubbard County Board. They had now remodeled the building and it was ready for business. The last step was the state inspector. And when they arrived, they informed the owners that the property was located within 1 mile of the city limits and that without legislative help, they could not operate an off-sale liquor store on that property. The owners did everything correctly. They applied with the township and the county and were approved. Because this building was in the liquor business being operated as a VFW, may have caused people within the township and county to overlook the property being located within 1 mile of the city limits. Whatever the reason may be, the result is that the owners completed all of the steps required of them in good faith. This is not the first time this has happened either. Precedence has been set previously when a similar situation took place in Isle. The owners, of course, have invested a lot of money in the project to bring an event center to the community of Akeley. Akeley is a small town with a population of 430 people. Small towns in greater Minnesota struggle to get new businesses, so this is a great addition to that community. The owners have committed to offering their event center free of charge to the local nonprofit organizations to help out this community. That offer is nice, but we all know that a business cannot keep their doors open just by being a good community partner. They have to make money to pay the bills, and that is why the approval of this off-sale liquor license is so important. There will probably be testimony from representatives of area municipal liquor stores, but this bill is not a threat to their communities or their stores. This request is unique because of the steps taken that were explained previously in the testimony here. With us today, if we have further questions, I have got two of the owners here, Jeff Stacy and Brian Hallett. And to the committee, we are open for questions if you want further information.
Thank you, Senator. Members, any questions? Anybody have questions for either of the House or the Senate office or the other testifiers? Not seeing any questions. Is there anybody else in the audience that wants to speak on this bill, either for or against it? Come on down. You gentlemen, since you're up there, do you want to say something? We'd be happy to hear from you.
Well, the senator's covered our position.
Could you state your name for the record and go ahead and speak into the microphone so the tape can pick you up?
I apologize.
No worries.
Brian Hallock, owner
co-owner of the Red River Event Center and liquor store that were off sale that we're presenting today. The senators covered our position pretty well
okay.
as far as what we're going through.
Sounds good. Well, welcome. Nice to have you here.
Thank
Go
you.
Ahead, sir, if you want to identify yourself.
Jeff Stacey, co-owner of the Red River Liquor Company and Established and Event Center. Again, Senator Pawlicki explained our position very well. Thank you.
Sounds good. Thank you. Gentlemen, please feel free to come on, sit down, and identify yourselves, and start whenever you're ready. Welcome to the committee. Whoever wants to go first, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Brian Hitchcock, Mayor of Akeley, Minnesota.
Welcome, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, we are here representing the other side. They did follow some of the procedures that were in place, but the county itself did fail to notify the city when they were supposed to do so and let us know that this was going to take place per statute, per Minnesota statute. So all the steps weren't correctly done. We'd hoped that they would have been. We didn't know that this was going to be an issue, to be honest with you, at the time. So we got kind of blindsided by this whole ordeal, and we're sorry about that. And we like the people that do own it as well, so we get along. Unfortunately, this has come between us. But like I said, it is a statute that reads the county board may not issue the license because it's less than 1 mile from city limits. Why that matters is because we weren't even notified about it until it was already done. The vote that had taken place on it, which was fine, was a unanimous vote from the Hubbard County Board of Commissioners, from what I understand. And Jeff Stacey got the good side of that bill or that thing. But his dad's on the. He's a county commissioner, so
okay.
He's one of the people that approved it for them. So we're just a little bit curious as to how all this process went down without the city of Akeley being notified. So we were a little bit concerned with that. And like I said, we do have a fear that it will hurt our city business. And this is council member.
Billy Botzer. I'm a council member there. Again, you know, had we known that would have taken place, we had just invested money into redoing our liquor store, remodeling it, and spending money making our off-sale bigger. Had we known that, we might have chose differently. But we, there's also, within 15 miles of the city of Akeley, there's already 8 off-sale liquor licenses. One more does not increase the number of customers. It's actually just going to decrease the number of, the money that we split between all of us.
Thank you, sir. Go ahead.
I'm Chris Arnold with the city of Akeley. I'm their liquor operations manager, Mr. Chair. I'm here on behalf of the city of Akeley and a number of other municipal liquor stores in northern Minnesota. They are correct. Precedence has been set, but the precedence was that the city of Argyle was for the issuing of the liquor license. In this situation, the city of Akeley majority vote is opposed. In our aspect, this could open up, with precedence being set where a city is opposed to it, could open it up where this could happen more than once. Our city relies on our revenues dearly. With LGA and that right now is good, but it is a way for us to generate revenues for our communities. Also, another instance where this has happened was in Lakeview about 15 years ago. The private went through the county. The county had it in meetings. The late Brenda from Lakeville had heard about it. She looked it up, contacted them, and that county, which had the hearing, actually ended up not issuing the off-sale license. But to this day, that business is thriving and doing well the way they were. So that's kind of what I have for you guys.
Thank you, gentlemen. Members, any questions for any of the testifiers? Not seeing any. Is there anybody else that wants to speak for or against this bill? In understanding this bill is somewhat controversial, and we are going to be here the next handful of bills here that we're going to hear. The liquor bills are going to go quite a bit more quickly. I know I've had several members ask about that. But with that, Representative Grasso will give you the final word.
Yep.
Thank you, Chair. Excuse me. With this bill coming forward, and it is my understanding that, again, this is for a specific place in a specific location, and it does not jeopardize the statute at all. So I just want to end with that, and I'll leave it to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Grossel. And we did not legally have a quorum earlier, so I didn't move the bill, but I will now move House File 2871, and the motion will be that it be referred to the General Register. Those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. You're on your way to the General Register. Thank you, Senator. Nice to have you here. Thank you, Representative Grossel, and everybody that testified. Representative Rubin, have you had a chance to look at the minutes for the meeting last Wednesday?
I have, Mr. Chair. I would move adoption of the minutes.
Thank you. Representative Rubin moves the adoption of the minutes from the March 14th meeting. Any questions, comments, corrections? Not seeing any. Those in favor of the adoption of those minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Thank you, members. Thank you, Representative Rubin. The minutes are adopted. Representative Johnson, 3072. Representative Johnson, I've always liked you, and what I've always liked most about you is your brevity. I will move House File 3072 so it is before this committee. With that, Representative Johnson, welcome. Nice to have you here, and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thanks for hearing the bill. This is a bill where the City of North Mankato seeks to change its 3.2 on-sale liquor license at Caswell Park. You might know Caswell is the home of the girls' state softball tournament. And to explain what they're trying to do is the City Administrator, John Herrenstein.
Welcome, sir. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Herrenstein. I'm the City Administrator of North Mankato, Minnesota.
Please proceed.
Thank you. Since 1985, North Mankato has operated the Caswell Regional Sporting Complex, a national recognized sporting facility for both softball and soccer. The complex has served two important roles. Serving the needs of local adults and youth, and also because of the quality of the park, it has attracted and been a source of tourism for regional, statewide, national visitors. In 2016, we marked the 25th anniversary of having the Minnesota Girls State High School Tournament at the complex. We also attract teams to adult softball tournaments from 23 states and four provinces in Canada. We drew 65,000 visitors to the area and generated approximately $7 million in economic benefit. It is a critical part of the regional sporting tourism economy being pursued jointly between the North Mankato and the newly formed Mankato Sports Commission. As the local economy in sporting continues to grow and evolve, the Caswell Regional Sporting Complex has expanded its services beyond softball to soccer, also including a leg of the North Star Bicycle Festival, the Anthony Ford Annual Pond Hockey Tournament, several other 5K races and other events. At this time, we hold a 3.2 on-sale liquor license. The committee is aware an increasing amount of craft beers, malt beverages, wines, and spirits are being made available that are above the 3.2 alcohol content. These beverages are increasingly desired by participants and visitors to the regional sporting complex. This license will allow Caswell Regional Sporting Complex to continue its role and enhance the role as a leader in the sporting economy in the region. As mentioned in my previous remarks, we do have a considerable number of visitors and economic benefit in the region. In short, we believe this license is important for the continued success of the operation of the park that we've been able to achieve over the past 25 years. That concludes my remarks.
Thank you very much. And as somebody who has played a lot of softball tournaments and had a lot of beer at Caswell Park, I can vouch for everything you just said. Members, any questions? Representative Rubin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just either to Representative Clark or maybe to the nonpartisan for a clarification, I was just thinking, and I don't have a problem with the bill, but I'm assuming that there is a restriction against serving alcohol during high school sporting events. I just want to make sure I'm accurate on that.
Representative Lewin, it is not legal to serve alcohol during high school sporting events.
All right. Thank you. That was just my question.
I think that Representative Johnson might consider that a friendly amendment.
No, I was not moving.
Might have to make another committee stop, but thank you. Good question. Any other questions?
Yeah.
With that, very nice job, and we will hold House File 3732 over for inclusion in the omnibus liquor bill. And with that,
which one do you want to first?
Representative Hornstein, we're going to do your two bills, which are Representative Thiessen's two bills.
Which one do you want to do first?
House File 3124.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, is that 3124?
Yes. Representative Hornstein, welcome to the committee. I will move House File 3124 so it is properly before us, and please identify yourself with the tape and proceed.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. I'm pinch hitting for Representative Thiessen. I represent District 61A. These sites are in his area, 61B. And just by way of background, Mr. Chairman and members, in Minneapolis, we have in our city charter a provision where if a facility is applying for a liquor license, they have to go through a number of additional hoops if they're in a residential area, a neighborhood type of area. And so because of that charter provision, we have to come to the legislature in situations like this. So this is why a number of Minneapolis liquor licenses have been historically before this committee. And part of that, Mr. Chairman, is that there needs to be thorough vetting in the neighborhood. So we go to the neighborhood organizations, which are quite important in our city, and this has been vetted by the appropriate neighborhood organizations. So 3124 authorizes the city to issue a full liquor license, notwithstanding our charter provisions, and this is subject to final approval by the city council. So this relates to the Kalita restaurant, and we have in the very recent past approved three in this general area. And this is a Tex-Mex restaurant opening soon. It'll be a modern interpretation of a Texas barbecue and a play on Tex-Mex flavors with an Argentinian flair. And the owner, Chef Danny Del Prado, has met with the Armitage Neighborhood Association. I mentioned the associations are important. They support this legislation. Their sister restaurant is in my district, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to invite everybody to experience Martina. You issued a liquor license to them last year.
That is very kind of you, Representative Hornstein.
With that, I have Grant Williams from the city if you have any questions.
He was very close to having to pay for all of us, so thank you.
Welcome, sir. Identify yourself with the tape and please proceed.
My name is Daniel Del Prado. I'm the chef and owner of Martina and the new Colita, too. So he's playing very well.
Taco Tuesday.
I do think that the liquor license would enhance the experience. And Martina, we did a good job of combining the food experience with the liquor program, the bar program. So I would like this to pass because it's very important.
Sounds very good, Representative Hornstein.
Mr. Chair, Chef Del Prado is also very modest. It was also recently named as one of the best restaurants in the Twin Cities.
Yeah. That sounds very good. Members, any questions? And Representative Hornstein, on this committee, we are very familiar with how the city of Minneapolis does things, and we're 100% in agreement with the process. We want to work with the city council and the neighborhoods, and in the interest of full disclosure, I've also played a lot of softball at Armitage Park. So with that, members, any questions for either of the testifiers, anybody else in the audience that wants to speak for or against, not seeing anybody? Representative Hornstein, thank you very much. We'll hold this bill over for inclusion in the omnibus liquor bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
And Representative Hornstein, thank you, sir. And why don't you stay there, Representative Hornstein? We'll move right on to, what's your next bill?
3345.
I will move House File 3345 so that it is properly before the committee. Representative Hornstein, to your bill.
So this is very similar. We have another restaurant at 4959 Penn Avenue South. and if you don't want more details, I think, again, Grant Wilson from the city is available for that.
Representative Hornstein, over the years we've had Mr. Ranieri and others from the city have done a very nice job. Generally speaking, if there are issues with the city of Minneapolis license, they let us know well ahead of time. But members have any questions, or do we want somebody from the city to come down? We appreciate the fact that you're always here and ready to help. Not seeing any questions, is there anybody in the audience that does want to speak for or against this bill? Not seeing anybody. Representative Hornstein, nice job. We'll hold over House File 3345 for inclusion. And
appreciate your help.
Anytime. Nice to have you here. Representative Anselmo, House File 3969. I will move that bill so it is properly in front of the committee.
Awful question.
And Representative Anselmo, Mr. Appetz, welcome back to the committee. Please proceed whenever you're ready, gentlemen.
Is he presenting?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm here to introduce House File 3969, and this is a bill to allow businesses such as Restoration Hardware that currently are located in Galleria to locate and build a large standalone concept. This is a new concept strategy from Restoration Hardware. We're including restaurants and cafes in there. We have an example like that with Barnes & Noble currently in Galleria, where they're selling food and wine and beer in a retail setting. This, I should add, is not a nightclub concept. Not there's anything wrong with nightclubs. It would be great to have a live music club. And I don't own a Fine Line Music Cafe, so that's not a pitch. A bill would still give the city, or any city, the ability to issue that license. We're just looking to change statute so they have the ability to do that. Restoration Hardware has done this concept in a few other cities like Chicago and West Palm Beach. And this is a new trend in what you need to do to make retail work better. I would love to have this included in the omnibus liquor bill this session, and I'll introduce my next testifier to talk a little bit about that concept, if that's okay.
Thank you, Representative Anselmo. Mr. Appetz.
Mr. Chairman, John Appetz with the law firm Messerly & Kramer, representing Restoration Hardware. And I'd like to just mention two other people who are in the audience with us. We have Robin Clary, who is over there. She is the VP Senior Counsel, and Dan Oritson, who is the founding director of the hospitality section of Restoration Hardware. There are some materials in your packets if anybody wants to see what this concept is about. As Representative Anselmo said, this is a new marketing concept, although it's been tried in a couple of areas. Restoration Hardware will be moving to just kind of across the street from where they're located now in the Galleria. And this definitely is a new concept in marketing that has worked quite well in Chicago, West Palm Beach, and other places where they've done this. This is a wine and beer sort of situation. It's not a bar. It's not a full liquor bar. But they've been quite popular. And in Chicago, they have waiting lines for their restaurant, which then in turn give people a chance to shop with a glass in their hand.
Thank you, Mr. Appetz. Thank you, Representative Anselmo. Members, any questions? Representative Swiczynski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So is this kind of just a totally new concept? So are there any other businesses that are allowed, like while you're shopping, to drink? Or is this completely a new?
Mr. Abbott.
Mr. Chairman, I was actually over at the outdoor show at the arena, at XL Arena, just last weekend, and I wandered through there with a glass of beer in my hand and was involved in that.
Representative Swiczynski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. No, that's not quite the question. Okay. I was, like, as a standalone business, just, you know, like I'm thinking an auction house or, you know, so there you go. Dollar store.
Maybe, maybe a food hall, something like that. Mr. Appetz,
Mr. Chairman, if I understand the question, yes, that is the answer.
Okay. Thank you. Is there anybody else that wants to speak for or against this bill? Not seeing anybody. With that, Representative Anselmo, Mr. Appetz, thank you. And House File 3969 will be held over for inclusion in the omnibus liquor bill.
Thank you.
Representative Allen?
I don't think they sell those there. They're not a hardware store. They sell no hardware there.
Representative Allen, I would say welcome to the committee, but it's a pleasure to have you on the committee. So if you want to go ahead and move House File 4001.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I move House File 4001.
Please proceed, and if you want to start, or your testifiers, identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill would allow the City of Minneapolis to issue an on-sale intoxicating liquor license to the restaurant Nighthawks at 3753 Nicollet Avenue South, and have a couple individuals to testify.
Thank you, Representative Allen. Sir, if you could identify yourself for the tape, please proceed.
Sure. Good afternoon. My name is Alex Giese. I'm here along with Don Chapman and Wes Chapman, and the three of us are co-owners of Nighthawks Diner and Bar in South Minneapolis. We're located on the corner of 38th and Nicollet in Kingfield neighborhood.
Can I ask you a quick question? Was there something there before?
Yeah, there was. Shorty and Wags.
Okay.
And then prior to that, it was Art Songs. So,
thank you.
Yeah. So it's been a corner kind of restaurant concept for quite a while there. And, and we're situated in while it's considered a residential node, it's very commercial in that particular corner. I'm also one of the owners of the building, so I sit here and, you know, representing the building ownership as well today, and we ask for your support on House File number 4001. We've been open for almost 3 years now. We opened with a beer and wine license in May of 2015, and we're very proud to have kind of been a part of the resurgence in the neighborhood. Proud to have employed a lot of people, added to the tax base, as probably anyone here who goes out to eat once in a while understands, it would be nice to be able to have a wider offering of liquor, I guess. So that's why we're here, just looking to get a little bit of an expanded liquor offering. We will continue to be a family restaurant. That's the idea. And of course, as everyone understands, the bill must be approved by City Council in order to pass or to become law. So we've engaged our City Council Ward Member, Andrea Jenkins. We've begun conversations with the neighborhood, the Neighborhood Association, the Redevelopment Committee, and we have very strong support specifically from our immediate neighbors, commercial building owners and business owners. So we ask for your support as well.
That sounds good to me. You have a very good representative. She's done a nice job for you. And thank you for providing jobs and a nice place for people to go. Do either of you want to speak? You certainly don't have to, but...
I said it pretty well.
Okay. Any questions from any members? Anybody in the audience that wants to speak for or against the bill? Not seeing anybody. Representative Allen, thank you very much. House File 4001 is held over for inclusion in the omnibus.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Representative McDonald.
You might have to skip that one too.
Representative Scott. Representative Scott has House File 2791. And I think this is. Representative Scott, welcome to the committee. I will go ahead and move House File 2791 so it is in front of the committee. And the DE amendment is an author's amendment, I take it?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
I will also move the DE1 amendment. And those in favor of the adoption of the DE1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted. Thank you, members. Representative Scott, to your bill, as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If the committee might oblige me, we had one just technical word change, if we could. We want to restore the bill back to farm winery rather than craft winery.
So I don't know if I have to be able to the committee or not throughout the bill.
Yeah.
I think, Representative Scott, I think the DE... I think that takes all of the changes that you're talking about out of the bill.
It does. Okay.
Don't need to do an amendment.
I knew that it was just eliminating the land requirement, but I wanted to make sure the word craft was they can have as well. So thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill seeks to make a level playing field in the craft winery business, in the farm winery business, by removing the requirement for the 10-acre land requirement. And I have a constituent here that has a winery in my district, and if I might, I just turn it over to him for testimony, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Scott. Sir, please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representatives, my name is Mark Hedin. I am the owner and winemaker at Cummings Vineyard and Winery in Ramsey, Minnesota. And I have over a dozen supporting letters and four co-authors. If you would like those.
We can have one of the pages can pass those out, or Representative David as well.
Thank you. What this bill will do is will allow all Minnesota wineries to play by the same rules, regardless of location. I own and operate a winery with a Minnesota alcohol manufacturing license. I do not have a farm winery license. I am not one of the 18 or 20 members of the Minnesota Farm Winery Association. I don't have a lot of grapevines, and I'm not a member of the Minnesota Grape Growers Association. And I don't own 10 acres of agriculturally zoned land. So I don't have a lot of protection in groups. By definition, a farm grows produce or raises animals. A winery ferments produce. I have applied for and been denied a farm winery license because I don't own agriculturally zoned land, even though I am approved by the federal TTV and my local zoning ordinances. Not having 10 acres didn't stop me from opening a winery. It just makes my life harder and more expensive. There are four differences between an alcohol manufacturing license and a farm winery license. Number one, an alcohol manufacturer has an annual winery licensing fee which is 10 times higher than a farm winery license. I know of no other Minnesota industry that the state mandates that the type of license depends on its physical location. Why should I be forced to do something in which I have no desire or expertise, farming, in order to do something I have expertise and interest in, winemaking? Isn't this a restraint of trade? Number two, there's a label fee for registering each type of label, $40 to register each label type. With 20 to 30 labels, that gets expensive. Farm winery licensees don't pay anything. Isn't this restraint of trade? Number three, renewal label fees. Alcohol manufacturing licensees pay $30 per label type every 3 years. No farm winery licensee pays this. Isn't that restraint of trade? Number four, no self-distribution is allowed by alcohol manufacturing licensees. If the bar or restaurant next door wants a case of wine for its customers, a farm winery licensee can pack up a case and bring it over. The alcohol manufacturer licensees cannot. Isn't this restraint of trade? A distributor typically wants 30% of the cost of the wine. There goes most of the profit. And most distributors aren't interested in dealing with a small winery. These differences don't stop someone from having a winery. They just make it harder and more expensive. So please delete this.
Thank you, Mr. Hedin. Members, any questions? Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this is really for the author. Representative Scott, it's my understanding that the whole purpose of a farm winery was created to give agriculture, right, to have these destinations and to have the ability for our agricultural areas to actually have some success. And so I'm curious as to why it is that you don't think that should be required anymore, because it's my understanding the whole purpose was to actually help farmers and to help agriculture.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to have the testifier speak to that.
Mr. Hedin.
Originally, there were no amounts of land required. I opened my first farm winery in the third stall of a three-car garage next to my house. Okay. It was only in 2012 that that paragraph was slipped into the legislation. So it's only been 6 years that there's been a 10-acre requirement. But we go back to the fact it's not an even playing field. why is someone with 100 acres of farmland more or better than someone like me who I can't afford to go out and buy a farm to build a winery on, but I can make wine and sell wine? If there was a liquor store in downtown Minneapolis and a liquor store out in rural area, they both, according to the state, have the same laws. It's only the local zoning ordinances that are different. Why shouldn't it be the same with a winery?
Representative Hillstrom?
I think I'll listen to the rest of the testifiers, Mr. Chair, and then ask my questions.
Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. With that, Mr. Adam Tice, if he's here, or Ms. Jennifer Schoenzeit?
We did.
She's here. Ms. Schoenzeit, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you and good afternoon. I'm Jennifer Schoenzeit. I own Zips Liquor Store in Minneapolis, and I'm here today to oppose this bill. This bill removes the requirement that farm wineries be located on agricultural land. When initially passed, it was argued that farms should be allowed to vary from the three-tier rules and able to sell directly to the consumer as a means to provide another way to add value to the farm production. The argument was that no one would actually make a farm winery their liquor store. Rather, it would be a tourist destination to help not just the farmer, but the community in which they were located as people travel to visit those wineries. To remove the regulation that a farm winery be on a farm by changing the name to craft will allow wineries to be anywhere. There will be less of a reason to travel to a farm where the wine is actually made. And then what is the purpose of the liquor store? For these reasons, I am opposed to this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Schoenzeit. It's always nice to hear from you, somebody who's doing this every day, selling beer and wine and liquor. Any questions for this testifier? Otherwise, we have one more person coming up, and then we're going to go crazy with questions. Mr. Tim Berman. No. Mr. Berman, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed whenever. I believe you've testified here before,
yes,
a few years ago.
Yeah.
Nice to have you back.
Thank you. I'm Tim Berman. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'm an amateur cider maker with aspirations of opening a cidery. Cideries are also licensed as wineries. I live in northeast Minneapolis, and I know it's an exaggeration, but northeast feels like the Silicon Valley of brewing. There are about 12 breweries within 2 miles of my house. There are no wineries or cideries. I think that everyone here is familiar with the success of the craft brewing industry. They're a proven engine of economic growth across most of the state. Craft wineries are asking for a level playing field. We need the same type of opportunities that craft breweries currently have. This bill will help to allow those opportunities. The largest impediment to craft wineries is the ability to self-distribute. The current requirement for a craft winery to pay a distributor nearly 30% of all revenue from outside sales is an enormous burden not required of craft breweries or farm wineries. The only option to enable self-distribution requires moving to agricultural land with a minimum of 10 acres. A large part of the success of craft breweries is the ability to self-distribute and to locate where the consumers are. And as I'm sure as a representative, you're always wondering, how would this bill benefit my district? This is a pro-agriculture bill. Wine and cider remain agricultural products even when fermented away from the farm. Grape growers, orchards, fruit growers, and beekeepers will benefit from the growth of our wineries. This bill also benefits towns and cities across all of Minnesota. Many of our towns and cities would welcome the opportunity to have a winery or cidery and the additional economic activity that it would bring. It's no coincidence that some of the most successful wineries in Minnesota are in those locations that were grandfathered in. Leveling the playing field with this bill would be of great benefit to all makers and consumers of wine, cider, and mead across the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Berman. Representative Swudzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this could be either of the testifiers.
as a farmer, have you approached your local unit of government and asked if the property you're on could be reclassified as agricultural?
The AGE is saying that the bill that is current, the statute that currently requires it be of like a minimum of 10 acres. There's no allowance for the, for example, the municipality that Mark is in has given him a variance, but they still don't allow him to be licensed as a farm winery.
Thank you, Mr. Rubin. Representative Swedzinski.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. That just was like, as far as zoning, just the property, I mean, regardless of that, I mean, have you asked to be rezoned as an agricultural?
Mr. Hedin, do you want
to? Yes. The city that I'm in, Ramsey, has their zoning laws written in a way that I don't need a variance. I am already approved for what I am doing in the space that I am doing it. Okay. They say it's not our problem. We cannot change it to ag zone. You are already approved. Your problem is with the state.
Thank you, Mr. Hedin.
I'm not Representative Helmson. Representative Pinto?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm maybe trying to catch up here and make sure I'm understanding. So the delete all just removes the one paragraph. I guess I want to ask, and I'm sorry I didn't catch your name, the gentleman to the right of Mr. Hedin. Mr. Hedin, so do you operate a farm? It sounds like you don't.
Mr. Hedin.
Mr. Representative, I do not operate a farm. I am in a business zone section. It's actually a strip mall. And I make the wine in the back half or back third, and I sell it, taste it in the front two-thirds.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So because in order to, so a farm winery under the statute is a winery operated by the owner of Minnesota farm. So it seems like regardless of what happens with this, if this were to be enacted, you do not operate a Minnesota farm. And maybe just my lack of familiarity with how this has been interpreted, but a farm winery is not winery operated by the owner of Minnesota farm. So I guess I don't see how you can get a farm winery license in any case, because we don't operate a Minnesota farm.
Mr. Hedin.
The definition of a farm has been debated previously, and if I'm buying the produce from a farm, I am helping Minnesota farmers. Whether I'm buying raspberries, rhubarb, grapes, if I wasn't there, if I was out of business, there would be less demand for those farmers' products. Less demand means the prices aren't going to be as high. It's bad for everybody all around. I don't care if you call me a farm winery or not, because if your definition is, do you use farm products, follow the farm winery rules, do you do everything that a farm winery who owns farmland does, to me, that's fine. You call me whatever you want. I'm a farm winery.
Thank you, Mr. Dean. President Pinto.
Mr. Chance, and Mr. Dean, I guess with great respect, someone who buys produce from a farm and keeps a farm in business and describes himself as not operating a farm, in my view, is not operating a farm. And so I guess if it's been interpreted in that way, that somebody who's not operating a farm is receiving a farm winery license, then separate from this bill, Mr. Representative Scott, I'm not sure that this bill would in fact help your situation, Mr. Hedin.
Mr. Hedin.
If you had an identical set of farm winery rules but changed it to craft winery, then it sounds like you'd be okay with that because I'm a craft winery. However, there is a monetary incentive not to change it because we have branding of associations like Minnesota Farm Winery and other associations. So it doesn't make sense to have duplicate sets of rules for the same effect.
Mr. Chair, just a final comment, but I'm not saying that I agree with where I think the bill's trying to go. I'm just pointing out that I don't think that the bill gets even to that place, not that I would agree with getting there. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Scott, so I believe that the amendment now puts the bill in a place that not only would you not have to be a farmer, but that it would allow people to buy products from outside Minnesota, bottle them, and sell them as if they're from a Minnesota farm winery.
That's currently the case.
Yes.
Mr. Hedin?
Currently, I have a alcohol manufacturing license. I can do everything I want to do. The only difference is I have to pay a lot more money to do it. When someone walks into my winery and they do a tasting of five different Minnesota wines, they don't ask me, what's your license? They ask me, where does this come from? Well, it came from Mankato, came from Coon Rapids. Where did you make it? I made it right here in Minnesota, right in back. Are you the winemaker? Yes, I am. They don't care about the license. They care about where the product's coming from, how's it taste.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wasn't finished. So, so in addition to it allowing you to buy the product from anywhere else, the purpose of a farm winery was to allow Minnesota farmers to have added value. And so the law was to, the goal of the law outside the three-tier system, right, was to help local farmers and the agriculture industry in Minnesota. Now, I don't represent an ag land district, but I do believe that when we put something in law to help a certain industry, that we should stay true to that. So, Mr. Chair, I strongly oppose the bill. I think that Minnesota farm wineries should be on farmland, and they should have to buy Minnesota agricultural products. And we have a three-tier liquor system that everybody else should be in, unless they have an exception, and I don't think this should be one of them.
Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. Members, any other questions? With that, Representative Scott will give you the final word.
Appreciate your time and support.
Thank you, Representative Scott. And with that, House File 2791. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Wolfman.
You're giving me the sad look.
I thought you were going to yell at me. I got sad.
I was thinking about it. I think with the controversy over this one, we ought to do a roll call. Oh, it's just been
we're
later.
Pointing it over. Yep, we're not,
cool.
We're not voting on it. And with that, Representative Slocum, my apologies for missing you with that. House File 2791 is laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Liquor Bill. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, Representative Scott. Representative McDonald, you're not next. No, just kidding. Come on down. Representative McDonald, House File 2128. I will make the motion so that House File 2128 is before the committee. Representative McDonald, I've got two amendments here, 655 and 654. Do you want to offer one of those, both of those?
At this time, Mr. Chair, we're not going to offer them as of yet. Perhaps okay. Later in the testimony.
All right. With that, Representative McDonald, the bill is before us. To your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee members, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you regarding this House Bill 2128. I thought maybe I'd start out with the introduction of a little history.
Representative McDonald, we don't want to do the history, so let's keep this as brief as we can. We're going to start moving through this a little more quickly because nobody in the committee wants to be here after 5.
Okay, very good. When George Washington first ran for the Virginia House of Burgesses, he wanted voters to come to the polls happy enough to elect him, so he treated them with drinks. The Washington campaign served 28 gallons of rum, 50 gallons of rum punch, 30 gallons of 38 gallons of wine, 46 gallons of beer, and 2 gallons of cider. Hard, no doubt.
Each.
For a total of 164 gallons of alcohol, there were 396 voters. George Washington won. And that is germane to this bill because this also pertains to some alcohol. And with that, I want to introduce what this bill will do. Currently, state statute prohibits a single entity to hold a taproom and a cocktail room license. It also prohibits a cocktail room and a taproom from being co-located. What the bill does today is repeals those prohibitions, which allow for a single entity to hold both a taproom and a cocktail license, and for them to be located in a single location. Due to the time restraints, I will end my testimony and introduce my testifier, and that is Mr. Bartley Bloom.
Mr. Bloom, welcome back to the committee. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Thank you, Chairman Hoppe, committee members, and Representative McDonald. My name is Bartley Bloom, and I'm the owner of Bentbrew Distillery in Roseville. We are the state's only company that locally brews and distills both craft beer and craft spirits. I'm here today to ask for your support. Current regulations prohibit co-locating a taproom and craft cocktail room. As the state's only licensed company to have locally developed both products, I'm asking you to allow me the opportunity to grow to my full business potential by introducing consumers to my entire line of products at the source. Before I go too far, I'd like to give you some perspective on why I'm here. Before Bentbrook Distillery, I was a propulsion test engineer at NASA. Seems like quite a leap from brewing to and distilling, but that's the thing. It's what I love so much about it. At NASA and at Bentbrook Distillery, I've had the ability to be extremely creative and also have an outlet for scientific and logical part of my brain. The hobby of brewing has turned into my passion and now, most importantly, my business. This is my family's and my everything. We have contributed our life savings to start this business. It's the quintessential American dream to create something out of nothing and be able to provide for others. For me, it's providing a unique craft beer and spirits experience for our fans. It's providing a living for my employees and providing for my family now and in the future. This is our retirement plan. This is our everything. One of the best things about owning a business is the people, and in my case, the people through all levels of the beer and spirits trade. We are a cohesive team. Without each other, we cannot be successful. We all strive towards the same goals of earning a fair profit while providing customers that which they demand. We have worked in good faith to achieve peace in the valley. Before today's hearing, between myself and my lobbyist, we have worked to facilitate meetings, successfully and otherwise, with many concerned groups, some of whom are sitting here today. Moving forward, I'm hopeful that we can continue to work together to achieve both of our parties' goals. First and foremost, I'm in no way requesting, nor do I have interest in becoming a bar. I will only be allowed to serve cocktails with my own spirits distilled on-site from scratch using Minnesota-based materials whenever possible. What I am asking for is an even playing field with other craft distillers in Minnesota and allow consumers to be introduced to these spirits at the source. Current regulations allow every other micro distillery in the state of Minnesota to have a cocktail room, and most do. Tattersall, Denord, Vickery, Far North, Copperwing, Norseman, 11 Wells in St. Paul, Jay Carver, and Laconia are all fantastic examples of Minnesota distilleries that have a cocktail room. We're asking for that very same option. We're not asking to circumvent or disrupt the three-tiered system, but rather have the same ability to serve craft cocktails in the same manner that these other businesses are afforded. We are not asking to become all three tiers by distributing Bentbrook Distillery spirits, simply serving cocktails following the same guidelines as my colleagues do and relying on the full system of distribution for consumer sales. We have seen absolute measurable growth in our beer sales through the three-tiered system once our tap room opens. Specifically, we have seen sales through liquor stores and bars grow by a factor of 2.7 since we began serving beer in our tap room. This shows a direct correlation between serving at the source and pull-through in the three-tiered system. With me today, I have a signed letter of support from Mike Patel, owner of Tower Glen Liquor in Roseville, whose business is exactly 1.6 miles from my existing tap room. With his close proximity, he is supportive, and for good reason. 40% of our top 30 customers are located within a 10-mile radius of our tap room. Consumers rely on the convenience of these customers in order to purchase because of our limited hours, limited selection, and Roseville-only location. We will not supplant local purchases through the state of Minnesota. In this signed letter, Mr. Patel not only offers his support for the passage of House File 2128, but also makes specific note that he carries certain other local craft spirits because they've been requested by patrons after sampling those spirits at the source, the craft distiller's cocktail room. Because of that, he is urging you to support House File 2128, allowing me the same opportunity as my colleagues to serve Bentbrook Distillery spirits at the source to create raving fans and lead to further sales throughout the entire three-tiered system. Along with Mr. Patel's letter of support, I have others from bar and liquor store owners in Minneapolis, Shoreview, Maplewood, Forest Lake, Hugo, Champlin, Otsego, Maple Grove, St. Paul, and Roseville. Okay. Finally, I also have a resolution of support from the city of Roseville showing their belief in our efforts. Roseville City Council Member Lisa Laliberte and City Manager Patrick Trudgeon are here today to echo the city's support. I guess we'll...
Thank you, Mr. Williams. I have Mr. O'Gara on the list. Is he here? Apparently, we have somebody sending in for Mr. O'Gara. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Chair Hoppe, committee members, my name is Tony Chesnick. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association. Unfortunately, Daniel Garrett couldn't make it. Daniel Garrett in St. Paul couldn't make it. He had a family emergency this afternoon. But he did want me to wish Representative McDonald a hearty, happy St. Patrick's Day. Back to you. I'm here to oppose House File 2128. When the taproom bill was passed in 2011, bar owners were concerned that it would allow breweries to sell their beer at lower prices than bars because bars had to pay shipping costs for the same beer. We also have concerns regarding licensing fee discrepancies between full on-premise establishments, craft breweries, distilleries, tap rooms, and cocktail rooms. One reason that led to the taproom bill agreement was that breweries would only sell their beer. They would not have a full bar. Thus, despite the competitive disadvantage, because tap rooms wouldn't be full bars, the MLBA, which Daniel Garrett at the time chaired, agreed to the bill. Since the passage of that bill, there have been an increase from 5 breweries to 135 breweries, all of tap rooms. In 2014, the legislature passed a law to allow distilleries to have cocktail rooms. At the time, a large brewer told Daniel Garrett that he might be interested in a cocktail room as well. He noted that it was pretty easy to get, bringing distilled spirits from other states, run it through an open barrel, sell whiskey and coke along with his beer. Based upon our concern that this would change the nature of the agreement around the taproom bill, a change was put into law to prevent the brewer to essentially create a full bar with beer and cocktails that had the benefit of not paying wholesaler costs. We felt this concern and thus oppose this bill. Thank you, Chair.
Any questions, members? Anybody else in the audience who wants to speak for or against this bill? Not seeing anybody coming down. Representative McDonald, we'll give you the final word. Representative Hillstrom, my apologies.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, it's my understanding that we do not allow people who make beer from being a bar. If you're a bar, you can't make anything. It's my understanding that if you make beer, you can't sell cocktails. If you make cocktails, you can't sell beer. That's kind of the whole premise under which we've set up the system. And my question is to the author, Representative McDonald. Representative McDonald, is it your goal to open this door for everyone? Is it your goal to, because you are, in the event this were to become law, and you're going to change the very nature of how things work in the future, and is that your intention with this bill?
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hillstrom, it is not. We currently in front of you is 2 amendments to specify a certain location, a certain size, and a certain amount that can be used if this bill is passed and allowed by the cities. Eventually they have to approve the license. So it is not my intent to open the door or to poke the nose into the camel's tent. This is specifically deals with Bent Distillery in the city of Roseville, which his city council and local businesses fully support in their community.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative McDonald, one of the things that we see here in this committee a lot is someone gets like a farm winery with ag land, and then someone else comes in and says, hey, I should get to do it too. So why is it that you think that ultimately this piece of repealing this restriction should ultimately become law? Because I understand the local community wants it, but local communities want lots of things that we regulate in Minnesota. Why is it that you in particular think that this having tap rooms and cocktails rooms together are a good idea?
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Chair Hoppe. I don't have a crystal ball. Nobody does. We can't really assume and guess that once one law is going to be passed and one thing is allowed, that everybody else is going to come down to the legislature and lobby for that. You can assume that, but we don't have a crystal ball, so there's no evidence and certainly can't guarantee that that'll happen. My bill particularly pertains to this one instance in this one city and this one businessman, this one entrepreneurs. So we certainly can't predict the future. And my bill doesn't open the gate to allow everybody to come in and ask for the same thing that we're giving today.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative McDonald, I'm going to say this only because I helped Surly happen. And now we have microbreweries everywhere. And I guarantee you that Surly, who I helped before they started in Brooklyn Center, right, my home legislative district, in 5 seconds, they're going to want to come here. And they're going to be asking to do this very same thing. And my question to you would be, how is that not then creating a bar?
Representative McDonald.
Well, Representative Hillstrom, if that is the case, if we were to look at a crystal ball and see that in the future, that would be great for the state of Minnesota for economic engine growth. Look at the breweries and how they just exploded in Minnesota and how vibrant they've been in each community. Some of the smallest communities up in the farthest northern reaches of the state down to the south. They've really created a great engine, a great economy, great entrepreneurial spirit amongst business owners and families. So if that's the case, if that's what the future is, that's probably good for Minnesota. Wouldn't you agree?
Representative Hillstrom.
No, Mr. Chair, I'm a no. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. Does anybody else have a question? Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative McDonald, once he stops talking. You know, we've seen a lot in this committee with craft beer wanting to have larger amounts sold every year. And this seems like you're going down the same path. And what is the difference in price between having a craft brewery distillery and a bar?
Representative McDonald or Mr. Bloom?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I cannot answer that question.
Yeah, basically the difference in licensing, which has been brought up, basically in Roseville, this is all municipality-driven. The license for the city of Roseville is $7,000. I pay close to $5,000 in manufacturing licenses and fees and that sort of thing. So that disparity really isn't there. I also have carry much more overhead as well as equipment costs and expenses than anyone else in the three-tiered system. So it really shouldn't be about a licensee's fee issue, but we are not a bar. We're not looking to be a bar. A bar can buy and sell anything that they want to buy and sell. We are only looking to serve what we make on our premises. This is a very limited amount of things. Yes, I can make anything, if you have that faith in me to make anything. But I can make pretty much any distilled spirit that I want to that's not geographically defined. But that still doesn't mean I can make Jim Beam, because I cannot make Jim Beam. I cannot make a mass-produced distilled spirit and serve that spirit. That is a big difference between us and a bar. We can't buy beer from Budweiser and serve Budweiser. We can't have a $2 cocktail night because it costs us more than that to make it. I hope that answers.
Representative Rosenthal, does that answer your question?
No, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chesick, do you want to come down and can you answer Representative Rosenthal's question?
Thank you, Chair Hoppe and committee. Representative Rosenthal, currently in Roseville, to get a distillery license for the city of Roseville is $750. To get a full on-premise bar restaurant license is $7,000. So there's the difference between the manufacturing licensing is something separate than local licensing fees.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative McDonald, we've seen this mission creep before. And, you know, we decided last year that we weren't going to do anything more with amounts sold from craft breweries and distilleries, and now it seems we're going down the opposite path and going towards more of a bar. And in my opinion, this bill is not ready for prime time, and I can see your passion. I love that, and take nothing away from that, but I do not support this bill.
Thank you, Representative Rosenthal. Representative Pinto, you're good. With that, thank you, everybody. We will have House File 2128 laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus liquor bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Thank you, Representative McDonald, Mr. Bloom, Representative Fenton. House File 3868. Representative Fenton moves House File 3868. Representative Fenton, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 3868 clarifies that customers at a brew on premises stores are permitted to offer samples of beer or wine so as long as they are not for sale. Tasting, I feel, is an important part of brewing classes in which customers learn what are the characteristics they're trying to achieve in the product. And current law is not clear on whether or not this is permitted. There appears to not be any opposition to this bill, and with me is Sebastian Desitel from Northern Brewer to explain why the clarification is important.
Good afternoon, sir. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Sebastian Desitel with Northern Brewer. So Northern Brewer is a local business. We specialize in homebrew supply and brew on premise. So we supply everything and provide everything for the equipment and ingredients for making beer, wine, cider, mead, cheese, kombucha at home. A really important part of our business is teaching classes and education around the brewing process. And a really big part of that is being able to taste and experience that and be able to offer more information around what's going on in the process through tasting. The language we are proposing is to add clarification to the current brew on premise and specifically around the tasting. So the example that I'll cite, and this will be very short, I promise, is it's like if you were to take a cooking class and you weren't able to taste the food afterwards. It's tough to see the entire process, but as somebody described, this is what chocolate is without actually tasting chocolate. So the whole point is to look at being able for us to offer tastings in our class settings and in the stores. And as Representative Fenton said, we don't see any opposition to this, so it should be fairly short. I will open up the questions to you guys.
That seems reasonable and common sense. Members, any questions? Is there anybody else in the crowd that wants to speak for or against the bill? Not seeing anybody. Representative Fenton, we're not even giving you the final word. We will just hold House File 3868 over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Liquor Bill. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Representative Fenton. Representative O'Driscoll. If you want to go ahead and move House File 3688, we are departing from liquor bills at least for a moment here.
I'll drink to that.
We can table this bill if you don't stop it off. Representative O'Driscoll, to your bill.
Mr. Chair, I believe it also is going to go to government operations after this, so I move House File 3688 to be re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations and Elections. Mr. Chair, I do have an A2 amendment and an amendment to the amendment, and I do believe that we also have a hard copy of what that amendment to the amendment would be. This says as a result of reviewing the bill and wanting to make sure, I should say the amendment to the amendment, make sure that any subcontractor or non-general contractor who does work on homes that would be subject to the nature of this bill would have to be licensed in accordance with Minnesota law. So I'd like to move the amendment to the A2 amendment.
We will the amendment to the written amendment to the amendment is still being distributed, so if you want to speak more to the amendment to the amendment while members get a chance to read it.
Again, Mr. Chair, the amendment to the amendment basically just scopes and says that individuals who provide work and services to a property need to be properly licensed within either local or state jurisdiction.
Okay, we are going to go ahead and then Representative O'Driscoll moves the amendment to the A2 amendment. All those in favor of its adoption signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. The amendment to the amendment is adopted to the H3688 A2 amendment as amended. Those in favor of the adoption of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. The amendment as amended is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, this product that you see in front of you is as a result of some work that we had done last year. If you recall that before the committee we talked about PACE financing, which stands for Property Assessed Clean Energy. And one of the things that we did is we tasked a group of individuals who had an interest in this to form a task force and a work group and to bring back a product recommendation. And before us today in House File 3688 is that product. One of the major concerns that I have shared with members of the committee is that the type of lien or encumbrance that would be on properties would be that of a special assessment lien if we followed a business model versus good public policy. The business model that's been used in other states allow for cities, counties, and other jurisdictions to be able to levy these special assessments against property, which would go ahead of any mechanics liens, first or second mortgages that are on the property. This is very concerning to me and to others in the task force group because it could encumber the property and cause those individuals to have a situation where they do not have the ability, when they go to sell that property, to have enough equity in the home to be able to sell the property, thus creating, a mini housing crisis. And I am of the belief that this is going to affect certain parts of the state of Minnesota, those that have more of established neighborhoods where there may be limited equity in homes. And I also believe that a group of people who could be subject to being taken advantage of in this might be those who are vulnerable adults or others who have lived in their home for a while wanting to make energy improvements. Let me go on the record by saying I am not not opposed to making energy improvements. I'm just opposed that the method of that one organization is planning as a business model. We think we are proposing something that's better for public policy. And with that, Mr. Chair, I have Mr. Elwood from the what's been deemed as the Unholy Alliance, working with industry professionals and legal aid, have and fully endorsed the bill that's before us today. So, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll, and I would never do this, but I've heard others refer to you, Mr. Elwood, as the Dark Prince of the Unholy Alliance, so please proceed with your testimony.
He's on the holy side.
On the good side. On the good side. Always a pleasure to have you here, sir. Welcome back.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and I will take that as a compliment.
It is meant as one of the highest order.
We want to thank Representative O'Driscoll and Representative Hillstrom as co-author of this bill. I'm here today speaking on behalf of a coalition that includes the Minnesota Bankers Association, the Minnesota Realtors, Center for Energy and Environment, the Minnesota Credit Union Network, and Legal Aid. And I know that the bill that before you is also supported by the Citizens Utility Board and AARP. In short, this bill provides the sufficient protections and guardrails around a business model that has taken a public purpose program PACE that was enacted in 2010, enabled, and made sure that some of the horrific things that we've heard in California that occurred when this was deployed on a grand scale in residential buildings and with residential homeowners, and this will protect against the problems that we've seen in California. They've been back three times since this was passed, to pass consumer legislation to put the horse back in the barn. This keeps the horse in the barn before it gets out.
And Mr. Elwood, thank you for your work on this. And Representative O'Driscoll, before we vote on this bill, could you, or both of you, or maybe we need somebody else, but could you tell us all the people that were involved in working on this? We kind of make fun of the Alliance, but this really was a really serious work, and a lot of effort went into this from people on both sides of the aisle. I think possibly even senators contributed. And I know we had a lot of stakeholders that weighed in on this in an effort to come up with good public policy. So if you want to go ahead and list all the people that were involved, we would appreciate that.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I think Mr. Elwood did do that. I'm going to ask him again to go through that list. And I would also like to start on a list with thanking Representative Hillstrom, who's been a partner in this last year and this year in our final product in being with that. So I'll start with Representative Hillstrom, and I'll turn to Mr. Elwood once again to recap who the participants have been.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll and Mr. Elwood.
Mr. Chair, members, there was a large task force with a lot of folks named in Representative O'Driscoll's bill from last year and Representative Hillstrom's bill from last year. And among the groups that are really supporting this bill would be the Minnesota Bankers Association, the Minnesota Realtors, the Center for Energy and Environment, Legal Aid, the Minnesota Credit Union Network, AARP, and the Citizens Utility Board.
Thank you very much. Members, any questions for Mr. Elwood? Seeing none, we do have Representative Elwood.
One other group that has been sort of an ex-official part of that has been the Minnesota Department of Commerce, has attended many of the meetings and has reviewed the information, and many, if not all, of their concerns have been incorporated into the bill as well.
Good addition. Thank you. And with that, I've got Mr. Logan O'Grady on the list to testify.
Thank you.
And John Carney. Welcome back to the committee, sir. Please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, actually, I'm Bob Long from Rock and Hoffman, sitting in for John Carney. John is in a family funeral emergency, and our firm is a member of Mencia, and Mencia is working on this bill. They're actually part of a larger coalition of members that we can mention to you, but thank you again for letting us testify, for being here, and we appreciate working with Representative O'Driscoll on the bill. Mencia has been active on the PACE debate in Minnesota for a number of years and really was very involved in the early PACE legislation, and as many of you know, commercial PACE in Minnesota has been very, very successful. We have over 47 counties in Minnesota right now have enacted local county board resolutions to bring commercial pests into their counties. And by the way, some of you may know this, but that you can't operate a pest program in Minnesota, whether it be commercial or residential, without a local city council or local county board passing an enabling resolution to allow that program to occur. So there's always a great degree of local control. Our coalition that we have formed during the interim is we call the Energy and Jobs Coalition. And in the coalition, we have the League of Minnesota Cities, the Association of Minnesota Counties, MNCEA, Clean Energy Economy, and I know Lola Grady has way over there for seeing. We have the Minnesota Mechanical Contract Association, the NECA Electrical Contract Association, the IDW State Council, and the Pipe Trades Association. So these groups have all been focused on the job creation potential of residential pace in Minnesota. So in the other states where it's been operating, California, Missouri, Florida, it's been heavily California, but the other states have been more recently added to the list. Over 500 communities have been doing residential pace programs. It's created over $4.3 billion of private investment, not public dollars, but private money coming in, and it's created over 35,000 jobs in those communities. So we've felt very strongly in Minnesota that the opportunity to bring residential pace in Minnesota will be equally successful as commercial pace has been. In fact, we know in all those public hearings at all those county board meetings, when the county board's been adopting those commercial pace resolutions, they've also asked, when can we do residential pace? So we know there's an interest in doing that out there. We would like to see a very strong residential pace program in Minnesota. We believe Representative Driscoll's bill is a good one. It goes very, very far down the path on consumer protections. Our biggest concern, and where we oppose it at this point, is the provision on the changing the lien status. So when you take the lien under current Minnesota law, special assessment law, that lien stays superior as it does for commercial pace. If you make it subordinate, which is the proposal in the provision in the bill, it will effectively kill residential pace in Minnesota. No operator will operate here. So we would be happy to answer questions, Mr. Chair, and we'd love to work with the committee members on hopefully improving Representative Driscoll's bill. Thank you.
And thank you for your willingness to continue to work with Representative O'Driscoll and the others. Any questions, members? Not seeing any. Is there anybody else in the audience that wants to come down and speak on this bill, either for or against it? Not seeing any. Representative O'Driscoll will give you the final word.
Once again, I'd like to thank members for hearing this, and again, Representative Hillstrom for her support on this. And members, I ask for your support as I renew House File 3688 be re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations.
Representative O'Driscoll renews his motion that House File 3688 as amended be re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations. Those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Members. Representative Albright.
Which one's that? Seems to be hearing up of this.
Representative Albright, we're going to do House File 3873, the work comp bill. I will move that bill as soon as I find it in my stack. Got it. I will move House File 3873. And the motion is that it will go to the Committee on Government Operations.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, House File 3873 is the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council bill. Representative Mahoney and I are very pleased to bring that to you. I will only give evidence to the Peace in the Valley by the gentleman sitting up there alongside one another until just recently. I think they were sharing gifts. I'm not sure, but, you know, that's Peace in the Valley. The bill was unanimously approved by the Advisory Council, which is made up of both labor and business, as well as appointed legislative leadership by the governor. Both the president of the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, Doug Loon, and the president of the AFL-CIO, Bill McCarthy, are members of that council. Now, the bill addresses the issues raised when the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals has an insufficient number of judges to constitute a quorum to hear a case. I have with me today Patty Millen, Chief Judge of the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals, who provided you with the rationale for the legislation.
Your Honor, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. As stated, I am
delighted to be able to talk to you about House File 3873. It seeks to address shortfalls in available judges in my court by allowing a selection of retired judges from this court and the lower court, OAH, to fill out hearing panels when a judge is unavailable due to a conflict or for other reasons. I'd like to state that I know of no other court in the state of Minnesota that does not carry this provision. From the judicial branch, the district court, Court of Appeals, Minnesota Supreme Court, and from the executive branch, the Office of Administrative Hearings, the lower court, and the tax court, all carry this provision. As the statute sits right now, we can continue to operate with a vacancy, but when a judge becomes unavailable, we are not able to, in some instances, meet the quorum requirements to continue with a full panel court, or in an unusual case, a three-panel court. This provision is used rarely. It is not often used. And I do have the assumptions for the fiscal analysis to this, and I could go more into the weeds if you'd like me to, and I'm happy to answer any questions from anyone.
Your Honor, our belief on this committee is weeds is really good in government operations. From the purview of this committee, I think you've covered all of the bases nicely. Members, any questions? Representative Lunan.
I was trying to pick up on your accent. Where did you go to college at?
St. Benedict's.
I went to the College of St. Benedict's, and I think, you know, I'm trying to, I want to say, I'm not sure if I'm happy that you didn't recognize my face, but rather my voice.
Okay, the justice wins. With that, is there anybody else in the audience that wants to speak for or against the bill? Not seeing anybody coming down. Representative Albright will give you the final word.
Thank you.
With that, Representative Albright, ladies and gentlemen, that's what we mean by brevity. Representative Albright renews his, I renew my motion that House File 3873 be referred to the Committee on Government Operations. Those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Thank you, members. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you,
Representative Albright. The motion passes. We are now on to House File 1974, Representative Albright. And
Mr. Chair, there is also a DE2 amendment.
I will move the House File 1974, and I will also move the DE2 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like it to be in. Those in favor of the adoption of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. The bill is before us as amended. Representative Albright, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The bill as amended before you requires that a commission of health and commerce convene a 13-member work group to report and provide recommendations on parity and mental health and substance abuse disorders. The work group will and must represent certain related industries and persons, and the report must include detailed information related to parity, state enforcement actions, regulatory actions, and recommendations on educating the public about alcoholism, mental health, and chemical dependency parity protections. I have with me today Sue Abderholden from NAMI, who has worked, in my opinion, tirelessly, along with other stakeholders, to make this a very relevant bill that will provide what we are looking for as a starting point to make sure that parity is the number one issue in the state. So with that, I defer to her.
Thank you, Representative Albright. Ms. Abderholden, welcome to the committee. It's nice to have you here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI, Minnesota. The federal mental health parity bill was passed 10 years ago, authored by a Democrat and a Republican who saw firsthand the devastation to families when their insurance didn't cover the mental health treatment that their loved one needed. The regulations were released 5 years ago, and Minnesota law follows both the federal law and regulations. But despite the passage of time, people in Minnesota and across the country have yet to realize the promise of parity, that health insurance would treat mental illness like any other illness. And there are three pillars of parity. You can't have different out-of-pocket costs, you can't have arbitrary treatment limits, and you can't have different what they're calling non-quantitative treatment limits. And the last one, NQTLs, is the issue that is truly not being enforced and is causing the most problems. Plans are supposed to examine the processes, strategies, evidentiary standards, and other factors used to apply NQTLs around medical necessity, formulary design, payment rates, network adequacy, adding new treatments approved by the FDA, just to name a few. We have several national reports demonstrating the problems faced by lack of enforcement of parity. Two are from the National NAMI Office, which found through surveys that 76% had an in-network provider for mental health versus 91% for other medical specialties, and 80% were more likely to have trouble finding a therapist that would take their insurance. There is a White House report that found that 59% of the complaints to the Department of Labor were about non-quantitative treatment limits, largely around prior authorization and written treatment plan requirements. The Milliman report issued last fall evaluated claims data by state and found that out-of-network for mental health office visits in 2015 were 3.5 times higher in Minnesota than for medical surgical benefits visits. They also found that in Minnesota, psychiatrists were being paid 40% less than a primary care physician for the same diagnostic code. When your loved one is facing a mental health crisis and you're desperately trying to obtain treatment, and you're facing problems with your insurance, you don't think, I'll appeal to the health plan or I'll call the Department of Commerce. It just doesn't really come up. And frankly, we don't want to rely on complaints to enforce this important law. We want the Departments of Commerce and Health to review information provided by the plans where they're demonstrating how they're following the law. The original plan, the original bill took language from the federal regulations and placed them in our Minnesota statute. And the big sticking point was how would plans demonstrate they're following the law, particularly around the non-quantitative treatment limits. Currently, they have to do something internally in order to, you know, carry it out. But we understand that this is a very complex part of the federal law. So, because they've been concerned about the reporting requirements and what that would look like, we've agreed to first move forward with the working group to determine what that reporting should look like and to come back next session with recommendations. I will admit that NAMI and other mental health provider and advocacy organizations did want more this session, but we believe that passing this bill as amended would be a really important next step, and I assure you that you will see us next session. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Afterholden, and I hope we do see you next session, and thank you for your concessions. I know this isn't what you wanted at the start of the session, but thank you for your hard work on this issue, somewhat handicapped by the author, but other than that, I think things are going well. The other people, any questions, members? Not seeing anybody. Is there anybody in the audience that wants to testify for or against the bill? Not seeing anyone else. With that, Representative Albright, we'll give you the final word.
Thank you.
He's getting better and better. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 1974, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations. Those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Ms. Abderholden. Thank you, Representative Albright. And with that, we are on to Representative Juergens. Oh, sorry. Yep. House File 3196. Representative Juergens, hang on 1 second. I misunderstood here.
Better, I'm going to pass the bill again.
Representative Fenton, 3196. Or Slocum. Representative Fenton, if you want to go ahead and move House File 3196.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As a result of a lot of hard work, I have a DE3 amendment that I would like to move to get the bill in the author's shape, please.
Representative Fenton, did you say the DE2 amendment?
The DE3.
Okay, now I have the DE3. Gotcha. Okay, Representative Fenton moves the DE3 amendment. Those in favor of its adoption signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The bill is amended into the shape the author would like it to be in. Representative Fenton, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. And I want to thank everybody and all the stakeholders who came to the table to help with House File 3196. What this does with the amendment is puts common sense protection, consumer protections in place so Minnesotans can access the treatment options prescribed by their health care provider by enacting guidelines for the use of step therapy protocols and allowing patients and their health care providers to ask for exceptions to those protocols in certain circumstances. So for those of you, step therapy is also known as a fail first. So it's a tool that's used to control the order in which a patient takes certain therapies. Much of this is applied to drugs treating a wide range of diseases such as chronic conditions including Alzheimer's, autoimmune disease, cancer, diabetes, epilepsy, glaucoma, multiple sclerosis, mental health, HIV and AIDS. And under this, a patient may be required to try one or more alternative prescription drugs before coverage is granted for the drug that works best for them. So essentially what this bill does is provide the needed patient protections from step therapy fail first protocols. Physicians know their patient's medical condition and history, and it's time to ensure that treatment decisions are determined with the expertise of the patient's health care provider. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Dan Anderson, who's with me today, to walk through our bill as amended.
Thank you, Representative Fenton. Mr. Anderson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dan Andreessen. I'm the Senior Manager of Advocacy with the National Multiple Sclerosis Society. Thank you for the opportunity today, and thank you, Representative Fenton, for all your leadership on this bill. The DE3 amendment is, like she mentioned, product of a lot of work being done by proponents and folks who had concerns with the bill, including Council Health Plans, PBMs, and Chamber, and we really appreciate all their work on it. Here to just kind of quickly go through the bill itself. On the DE3 amendment, probably starting with here on subdivision 3, on the second page is where we kind of go into the bulk of the bill regarding creating the override process. You'll have three exemptions here that a provider could use to wade through a step therapy process. The first one of these is if the patient that the doctor is seeing could have an adverse reaction to that medication or have a decrease in function or be harmed by the medication. Second exemption is for if that person has already tried and failed on that medication in the past or a drug within that pharmacological class. And then three is if they're stable on that medication, and so we want to keep those folks on that medication if it's working for them. Further on in the bill, there's language in here that says that the health plan would not be required to provide coverage for that medication if it wasn't on formulary. There's also language in here about timelines with this process. Right now, the health plan would be required to respond within 5 days of a request and 72 hours if that request is an emergency. If the health plan doesn't respond within that timeline, the appeal would be deemed granted. We also have language here requesting that or requiring that providers use the electronic transmission process that they currently have to do under Minnesota law. And then one other piece I'll touch on is that it also doesn't prohibit requiring an enrollee to use a generic if that is the better option for branded drugs. So that's kind of the quick.
That was nicely done. Thank you, Mr. Andreessen. Members, any questions for this testimony? And we got Representative, there's three people standing behind you scowling at you. So, oh, sure, now they're smiling. do the three of you want to come up and speak to the bill? If any one of you wants to or all three of you want to, please come on down. If you could state your name for the record, proceed whenever you're ready.
Sure, I'm Dr. Tim Feima. I'm a child neurologist and adult neurologist at Gillette Children's Specialty Healthcare here in St. Paul. I'm here today to support House File 3196 step therapy protocol reform based upon my role as an epileptologist. So my focus of this bill would be more the epilepsy-related medications. I work at Gillette. I'm also an adjunct professor at the University of Minnesota, and I'm here mostly, I'm the chair of the Professional Advisory Board of the Epilepsy Foundation of Minnesota, and that's why I'm here today. Epilepsy affects about 4% of the population, 4% of Minnesotans, and I'm here to speak mostly for those adults and kids, but also the doctors. As the current step protocol exists in various forms of the various insurers, this creates a lot of risk for patients, as we don't have access to the full cadre of medications that can help treat our patients. uncontrolled epilepsy can really harm health. It leads to work losses, and rarely it's life-threatening. So I very much would like to have the opportunity as a provider to give up-to-date medical recommendations and access to medications for my patients. And a lot of the step therapies and the step protocols that exist, I don't fully allow that. So I'll keep this brief and we'll kind of leave it there. I really appreciate your time and welcome any questions and thank you for your support.
Dr. Fanna, thank you very much for your testimony and thank you for what you do. Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you.
Will you state your name for the record and proceed?
Yes, I'm Ted Cadwell, and I'm here on behalf of the Arthritis Foundation. I am the chair of the National Arthritis Foundation Advocacy Committee, and as they say, the old hair club for men, I'm not just present, I'm also a client. In this case, I'm also a patient. I've had juvenile rheumatoid arthritis since age 2, so I know the effects of arthritis and related diseases. And as chair of the advocacy committee, I've heard countless stories from other patients, from physicians, about their need to access certain drugs that are necessary to treat their arthritis. Now, as part of this step therapy reform bill, we're not saying that there is no role for a step therapy. Arthritis is a prime example of that. There are people who have all different types of arthritis. There are 54 million people in the U.S. with arthritis, including 900,000 in Minnesota, but they have all different gradations. So if you come in and you might have a sore joint or a few fingers affected, then in that kind of case, there might be a role for step therapy. If you're someone like myself who has systemic rheumatoid arthritis with severe flare-ups, what happens is the other ways of treating the disease are just treating symptoms. It's not halting the progression in autoimmune diseases like rheumatoid arthritis. So if you require you to try and fail, what happens is the disease keeps proceeding and keeps doing joint destruction and damage that's irreversible. You end up with people like me who have joint deformities and needed joint replacements and other things. I've heard of so many people in my role in the advocacy committee who have been through that process, and they say it can take many months or even a year to get the medication that they need to treat their symptoms. And in the meantime, it's doing irreparable joint damage and destruction. And so we want to advocate on behalf of this bill because we want to put these decisions in the hands of the doctors who know their patients best, who know the best treatment, and know the best medications for them.
Thank you, sir. Members, any questions? Not seeing any. Is there anybody else in the audience that wants to come down and speak for or against the bill? With that, Representative Fenton, will you mute? Oh, Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks to everybody who testified. I'm a co-author on this bill. Thanks, Representative Fenton, for doing the heavy lifting to get some compromise language. This is a hard issue, and I have type 1 diabetes, so I'm walking around hooked up to insulin all day, every day. And I just think it needs to be said that one of the reasons that so many therapies are out of reach for people and why we're trying to find ways to manage therapies looking at the dollars is because of the amount of increases we've seen in the therapies that many of us depend on. Insulin has increased in price over 200% in the course of just 5 years. The last time I had a prescription filled for insulin, it was $1,500, and it keeps you alive. That's a pretty big deal. And so I want to acknowledge that while we want to be sure that patients have access to the life-saving medications that they need, I think that we also need to, as policymakers, consistently keep it in our heads that we need to make sure that we have medications that are priced in a way that people can afford them. So that's all I wanted to say. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Halverson, and thank you for your support of the bill. And I think this would be a good time to point out that this has been a long work. A lot of people on both sides of this, all sides of this, is this issue have gotten together and worked pretty hard on this. So Representative Fenton and everybody else that's working this, thank you very much. And with that, Representative Fenton, we'll give you the final word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. You're right. This was a great effort by that by everybody, which I think demonstrates healthcare done smart. So with that, I would make a motion to refer this on to Health and Human Resources.
Okay, we did amendment. Representative Fenton renews her motion that House File 3196, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on HHS Reform. Those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, members. Thank you, Mr. Cadwell, Dr. Fama. Thank you, Mr. Andreessen. With that, we're going to go to Representative Anderson, House File 2995. Representative Anderson moves House File 2995. Representative Anderson, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will be brief. I do have resources if necessary, but just to give you a description of what this bill does, this allows liquor stores that have wine to transfer between the stores that they own. So if you want to think of it in terms of if you're a prescription drug a pharmacy, you can move prescription drugs from a pharmacy easier than you can move wine between commonly owned stores. So this changes that to put it in the same system. This is product that is already moved through the three-tier system, and it's not an issue of warehousing. It's just giving these owners the flexibility to manage their wine so it doesn't spoil before they get it sold. So that's it with a nutshell, Mr. Chair, and I'm here for any questions.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Members, any questions?
No.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess this is to you because Representative Davids isn't in the room. Where is it that you plan to send it? Because I do see that in the amendment, the DE amendment, there's a tax collection section amended.
Representative Hillstrom, I think I was looking at the wrong bill with you. This is 2995. We don't have an amendment.
Got it. Sorry.
After we were talking about that, I was looking for the tax provision. She was, I don't see it.
So where is it that you intend to send this?
The plan is to send it to the General Register.
Mr. Chair, I'll ask my questions after we hear from the rest of the testifiers.
Sounds good. Is there anybody else that wants to come down or anybody that wants to speak for or against the bill? Mr. Reynoso. Mr. Reynoso, welcome back to the committee. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Edward Reynoso. I'm the political director for Teamsters Joint Council 32. We represent in excess of 62,000 active and retired members in the state of Minnesota, about 850 members within the liquor industry itself. But as far as this bill, you know, look, I mean, we certainly do have some concerns on the face. Looks like a harmless bill, but we have some deep concerns with regards to the three-tier system. First of all, you know, these liquor stores just withstood the impact by Sunday sales. And we believe that the potential of larger liquor stores being able to warehouse this product, send it to one site, and circumvent the three-tier system, this opens the door. And so we're really concerned about that. We're really concerned about competition and being able to have an even playing field in where some of these larger out-of-state liquor stores could buy larger quantity of products, warehouse it, and send it out to their liquor stores from there. So that's our concern in brief, but we are opposed to this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reynoso. So, members, any questions for Mr. Representative Lumen?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is there any alcohol that would get out to those liquor stores that wouldn't go through the three-tier system? I'm confused.
Mr. Reynoso or Representative Anderson, whoever wants to take that one.
To the testifier, he just made the comment that it would circumvent the three-tier system, and I'm just looking for clarification on how that could happen.
Mr. Reynoso.
As Mr. Chair, Representative Lunan, as of now, no. But again, as I'm saying, is that we're concerned about the door being open towards that and warehousing in big facilities to be able to distribute from there. I'm not saying that the wine right now would be circumventing the three-tier system, but we're concerned in the direction in which it would go.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Halverson and then Representative Cresha.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as I'm looking at this, and it looks like it wouldn't have to be a Minnesota business? I mean, could you transfer from out of state, and is that a possibility under this? And the other thing that I'm concerned about, but I'm kind of concerned about the way this is being teed up, because it's kind of teed up as a, as Mr. Reynoso said, kind of a little nothing. You know, I have an extra case of wine here, I want to move it over here, but there's no limit in terms of the quantity. So you could move a truckload of wine if you wanted to from one to another, and I'm wondering if you can move it across state lines.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Halverson, you cannot. If you look in the language starting at line 1.11, it says the license for the transferring and receiving premises are held by the same licensee. So they are a licensee of the state of Minnesota. It would not be going across state lines.
Representative Halverson.
And Mr. Chair, is there anything in this bill that would limit the amount? I see there's a time period that it's limited to, but it, could it limit the amount that can be transferred from one licensee to another, or one licensed business?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Halverson, on line 13 on that page, it says only one transfer is made from the licensed premises in a three-month period. And when you're looking at that issue, Representative Halverson, the purpose of this is to allow a business to manage their product so that it doesn't spoil. That's what it comes down to. So if they're having being able to sell a product from one place but not the other, it allows them to make those adjustments. It doesn't, this isn't about warehousing at all. In fact, this is all of this alcohol is going to be traveling through the three-tier system. That's how it gets to the stores in the first place. And so it doesn't change that at all.
Chair. Representative Halverson.
It doesn't look like there's any limit in terms of quantity. So you could absolutely, and it doesn't say anything about spoilage or expiration dates or anything like that. So while that may be the intent, that is not going to be the effect. And I think that we have small businesses, and I think that our local liquor stores are kind of the last bastion of our Main Street retailers that have made a lot of changes and have had to adjust a lot in the last few years with regard to our changes in our law, changes to our three-tier system, changes to Sunday sales, and we are asked, and we have a liquor business where a local mom and pop store can compete with Target. We don't have that with any other business. You don't have that with craft stores or with other kinds of stores. You can't compete with a giant if you're tiny. These guys compete on a level playing field. And my local liquor store, who is investing in my community, who is donating to my Rotary, who is, and you know, has been donating to our Eden Foundation wine tasting for years and years and years, can compete in this playing field. And by having something so vague, while you say it's there to help people with wine that's going bad, it really is opening up a door, it looks like to me, to warehousing. And I think that it puts our small mom-and-pop retailers at a real disadvantage. And these are the guys who are investing in our community, raising their kids in our towns, and we want to make sure that we don't unduly burden them.
Thank you, Representative Halverson. Representative Kreshaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Representative Anderson, so I'm just curious, just help me understand. I've taken all the rhetoric aside. So three blocks from my house is a little liquor store, and they own an affiliate store in St. Cloud. And when I go there and they're out of the wine that they're advertising because everyone went and bought it, it's very popular, and they say, hey, we have that down in our St. Cloud store. How many semi-trucks does it take to get that up to Little Falls? Or can they just throw it in the back seat, maybe the next day, under your bill?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Kreshaw, you explained it more eloquently than I could. That is exactly what we're doing here today, is we are allowing a business to manage their product to meet their needs. And this is, I think, how this is being portrayed is silly, quite honestly, when you consider that you can move a prescription drug from one pharmacy to the next, but yet you can't move a bottle of wine from one liquor store to the next.
Representative Kreshaw.
Thank you. And so just my follow-up. So we can talk about helping all of it. If you want to help my small liquor store, let me buy that bottle of wine so I don't have to go to the large box store, because I'm going right back there the next day to buy my favorite wine. So I support your bill. Thank you.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So how many people or how many locations can be on the same license? So is every Costco store on the same license? Is every Costco store on the same license?
Sorry. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to ask for Mr. Clem's help on this one.
Mr. Clem?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom. So for an off-sale liquor licensee, each premises would be licensed. And state law limits the number of licenses that each holder of a license can have per city to one. So only one licensed premises per holder of a license.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So that's per city. So my question then becomes, so if Costco is the license holder and Costco has a large shipment of a particular wine and they want to transfer that to one premise, so they want to go from Maple Grove to Plymouth, if they make a transfer, they start with all of the product in Maple Grove and they leave just what Maple Grove needs in Maple Grove, and then they transfer it all to St. Louis Park, and St. Louis Park then keeps what they need but then transfers all of the rest from St. Louis Park now to Plymouth, and then takes what they need and then transfers all of what they have to St. Cloud. How many transfers were that from each store? Because while it's the same licensee, it's transferring the product, all of it, from one place to the next place to the next place. So can you tell me how this works with transferring within 3 months?
Mr. Clayman?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, as I understand it from the text of the bill, each premises would be able to, or each licensed premises would be able to make one transfer every 3 months to another premises that's owned by the same licensee.
So,
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, in fact, Costco could do that with one particular product. They could take all of it, and they could say, we're going to transfer it first to Plymouth, we're going to transfer it next, and so they literally could have all of one particular product go to one place, buy it in mass, and then distribute it in that fashion by just leaving behind only the piece that the Maple Grove store needs, or leaving behind only the piece that Plymouth needs, or leaving behind only the piece. And so basically, they become their own distributor of that product.
Well, Representative Hillstrom, I think you're right, but I don't think they would even need to leave anything behind. And as the bill is written, as long as it only leaves one premises once every, each licensed premise once every 3 months. But I think other than that, I think you're right. Mr. Inoso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just one thing to add. Look, you know, I believe the cautiousness that we go forward with this is that we believe that this is opening of the door of direct shipment. And if it is a direct shipment from a winery or from a distillery, we believe that this would be negative for the industry and certainly would circumvent the three-tier system.
Thank you. Mr. Pido, do you want to come down, I take it?
Welcome back to the committee, sir.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name is Don Pido. I'm with Breakthrough Beverage here in St. Paul. We're wine and spirits distributors as well as beer distributors. We are opposed to this legislation for a couple reasons. Number one, in the bill, we have not seen where it's specific to off-premise accounts. It's open-ended, which means on-premise accounts, off-premise accounts. So if I own a restaurant and I also own a store, I could be funneling goods from a store into my restaurant. I'm not sure how you'd manage an audit trail on a product like that, but it kind of opens the door up. I'm not saying that's the intent, but it certainly opens the door up for a situation like that. And I hear this every 3 months. Does that mean April 1st, July 1st? How does this work? Is this a moving calendar, or does every retailer have the freedom to do what they want, when they want, every 90 days? And who manages, who enforces this? What about the tax dollars that move from one community to another community? So we're concerned about that. It seems really loose, loosey-goosey. And the other thing that really is a primary concern, all the wine and spirits, and as the beer distributor as well, we know where every case of every product goes because of the level of sophistication we have in our facilities. So if there's a recall for a product or out of date or something of that nature, we know where to go to pick up that product. And we've done this before with various goods, and we can turn around in a couple days and bring that product back into our facility. In a situation like this, you've got movement of goods throughout the marketplace, and there'd be very little way in which to capture that information.
Thank you, Mr. Pido. Representative Anderson, do you want to respond to that?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. To address Mr. Pido's concern about whether this is intended for on or off premise, I've asked Mr. Clem to put together a amendment for this. And if Mr. Clem wants to go through that, my intent is to have it just for the off sale.
Representative Anderson, is your intent to do that amendment now? Or
I'd like okay. that, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Clem?
Mr. Chair, so the amendment would be in oral form, page 1, line 9. Delete A and insert an off sale. So page 199, delete A and insert an off sale. So what that would do is it would say that the holder of an off sale retail intoxicating liquor license may transfer wine.
Representative Slocum, Representative Hilstrom, you guys got that?
Thank you, Mr. Freeman. Any questions on the amendment, what it does? Let's go ahead and vote on that amendment. Those in favor of the adoption of the oral amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Thank you, members. I think it makes it a better bill. Thank you for your flexibility, Representative Anderson. With that, Representative Slocum, you, Representative Hillsborough.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I don't believe that we should be doing this. I believe that the three-tier system is in place for a reason, and this is just starting down the path of making it so that people can do direct shipment. And so with that, Mr. Chair, I'm going to ask for a roll call vote.
Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. We had Representative Slocum was already. And we're Representative Halverson, you good? Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that we have to be very careful at look what the bill says, not what we're hearing the bill will do. If your intent, Representative Anderson, is to have somebody drive a case of wine from one store to another in the back of a vehicle, then those are the limits you should be putting on this. If your intent is to allow others to transfer unlimited amounts of wine, that's what your bill is doing, and so I can't support that.
Thank you, Representative Halverson. With that, roll call having been requested, Representative Anderson renews her motion that House File 2995, as amended, be re-referred to the General Register. The clerk will take the roll.
Hoppe.
Aye.
Fenton.
Aye.
Allen.
No.
Anderson.
Aye.
Applebaum. Barr. Davids.
Aye.
Branson.
Aye.
Halverson.
No.
Hillstrom.
No.
Johnson. Kreisha.
Aye.
Noonan.
Aye.
Noonan.
Aye.
Nash.
Aye.
O'Driscoll. Pinto.
No.
Rosenthal.
No.
Slocum.
No.
Smith.
Aye.
Swazinski.
By a vote of 10 to 6, the motion prevails. The bill passes and is on its way to the General Register. Representative Juergens? Lunan. Juergens. Representative Juergens, come on down. House File 3667.
and Representative Jurgens, I will move House Bill 3667, so it's in front of the committee, and you have the 0618 amendment.
That's correct.
I assume this is an author's amendment?
That's correct.
I will also offer the 0618 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like it to be in. Those in favor of the adoption of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you to me for passing that motion. And with that, Representative Jurgens, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know you want to be out of here by 5. I'll do the best that I can. What this bill does is it's House File 5667. We're into our first year of Sunday sales. I had a liquor store owner in my district that brought some enhancements to me, and I pulled some of the other liquor stores within the district. And I know in the House version of the bill that we passed last year, we had the opening time on Sundays to be 10 a.m., and it was changed to 11 a.m. from the other body. That's part of this bill, to give that another shot to have an earlier start time. And if a 7-hour open day is what's desired, in this bill we've offset that with a close time of 5 p.m. on Sundays. More importantly, one of the things that came up this past year when Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve fell on a Sunday, is an opportunity to expand the hours every 8 years or whatever that comes to when those holidays fall on a Sunday. So what the amendment does is it says on Christmas Eve, if Christmas Eve falls on a Sunday, the opening time can be 8 a.m. in order to capture additional sales. And if New Year's Eve falls on a Sunday, that the close time could be extended to 10 p.m. again to capture increased sales. So that's my bill, brief, and I stand for any questions.
Thank you, Representative Jurgens. Members, any questions? Is there anybody in the audience that wants to come down and speak for or against this bill? We should have had you go way earlier, Representative Jurgens. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 3667 be laid over for, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus liquor bill. Thank you very much. Nice job, Representative Jurgens. Next is Representative Lunan. Our last two bills are both tax bills. Representative Lunan, House File 1831. Representative Lunan, if you want to move your bill.
And moving it to possible inclusion?
Yes. Both of the next two bills will be held for possible inclusion in an omnibus liquor bill.
I would like to move House File 1831. I'll be brief and acquiesce to my testifier. House File 1831 basically starts a grape and wine growers council and applies an even tax on out-of-state wineries that sell directly to consumers, just like the tax the Minnesota wineries pay when they do direct shipment to consumers. And I'm going to go ahead and have my testifier, for the sake of time, step up right now and explain it.
Thank you, Representative Lunan. Sir, please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Irv Geary. I'm with the Minnesota Grape Growers Association. We represent 46 wineries in the state of Minnesota, as well as hundreds of grape growers around the state. The Minnesota Grape Growers, as you're aware, was instrumental in passing the Farm Winery Bill so many years ago, and we track legislation closely. Current state statute says that any winery from anywhere in the U.S. can ship direct to consumer into the state of Minnesota with no license in the state, and that sale is actually constituted in statute as not, it says, not a sale. So as such, there is no sales tax collected, and there's zero tracking collected on or with that sale. Our current problem with this current statute is that we don't know if it's 2 cases, 4 cases, 6 cases. Nobody knows because nobody's tracking it. One of the handouts that is being passed around is the highlights that were taken from the direct-to-consumer report that was put together by Wines and Vines and Servos, which is a ship-compliant company that tracks direct-to-consumer shipments around the country. And you will see that, just some highlights from that, current states around the country, we currently have 6 states that allow no shipments of wine whatsoever. We have a couple states that are extremely restrictive. We have 4 states that allow shipping with a license, so it is tracked, but there's no sales tax collected. And then there's 3 states that require no licensing, no sales tax. That's currently Minnesota. And then right below that, you'll see that we have 36 states that require you to get licensed in the state, which then creates the tracking mechanism, and they collect the sales tax and liquor excise tax on that at different levels. We're asking that we require the same kind of shipment as 30, or the same kind of licensing that 36 other states require, and we collect the sales tax that 36 other states require. The biggest issue here is if one of our wineries want to ship to Wisconsin, to Iowa, to California, they have to get licensed in that state, and they have to pay sales tax in that state. Those same states, those wineries in those states, can ship in, no tax collected. So our bill, first and foremost, would provide a tracking mechanism to make sure that we are only selling two cases, direct to consumer, and the sales tax is collected to put even the playing field. I've heard a lot today about even the playing field for Minnesota business. This would even the playing field for Minnesota wineries as well as Minnesota liquor stores. I've talked to two of my local liquor stores. They're vehemently in favor of this bill because they see wine clubs as a direct assault on their business because they can't compete with California when they don't have to pay sales tax and we do. So that's the taxation side of it. Excuse my voice, I'm suffering from laryngitis. The other part of it then goes into the Wine Council. We would like those funds directed to the Department of Ag through the creation of Minnesota Grape and Wine Council. Currently, this same process exists in Michigan, Missouri. To a lesser extent, they just started one in Iowa, Indiana, New York. A great example is in Washington State. When Washington State had, in 1986, they had 55 wineries, very similar to where Minnesota is. In 1986, they started the Grape and Wine Council. They are now the number two producer in the country. The Wine Council, the Grape and Wine Council, uses those funds for promotion, education, and overall kind of development of the industry. It teaches the people in the state what Minnesota wine is about. It helps the wineries create better wine. It helps the grape growers grow better grapes. So it's all about taking that money and building our industry up and doing that through education. As an example, if we look locally, Minnesota-made wine is less than 1% of total Minnesota wine sales currently. If you look at Missouri, that has a very successful grape and wine council, they're at 11%. Michigan is at 12%. 12% of all Michigan wine, so all the wine in Michigan purchased is Michigan wine. Even Iowa is surpassing us, and we kind of feel that's a little bit of a slap in the face. So we would like to level the playing field in Minnesota. We feel it's time that we get to play with the same rules that everyone else gets to play with. So, any questions?
Mr. Huey, thank you. Members, any questions? Not Ms. Saverin?
I just want to speak to the need for the council. I served as the...
Before you serve, could you say your name for the
my
tape?
My name's Teresa.
We know who you are, but that way you have it at tape.
Teresa Saverin, and I'm the owner of Saverin Estate Winery, and it's a family-owned farm winery that's located in Waconia, Minnesota. And we are operating on a beautiful 50-acre farm, and we employ lots of people, and we're supporting a couple of families. I just want to give you the vision of what can happen when this council's developed. Right now, there's three wineries in Waconia, and we have literally turned around the agritourism and the tourism incentives for people to come to Waconia because of what's happening with the wine. The wine industry is getting ready to really take off. So it would really be beneficial to us to have some capital to do more marketing. We could easily be on the same playing field as Washington State. Our grapes are developed at the University of Minnesota, are being sold all over the world, actually, and actually more production of those grapes are taking place in other states. And because they have wine councils, they have grown into large production of wine. I would love if a truck came up my driveway and took out 12 cases to a distributor every day. But as a result of our disadvantages and trying to get the word out about the wine industry, we're dependent on being entertainers and have event centers, and I have to deal with brides every weekend, so I'm just saying it would be really nice to just sell more wine. I would like it if Restoration Hardware would have Minnesota wine, and I would say they should have to have Minnesota wine.
Send the brides to them.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's anyway, but that I just think it could really be a boost to our industry, and I think our industry is just could explode if we had the support to with some funding. And we're bringing this tax disadvantage to your attention, so maybe you can do something for us.
Thank you, Ms. Sovereign.
Thank you.
Whoever wants to come down next, please come on down and identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, committee representatives. My name is John Miller, and my family and I, we live in Das, Minnesota, and are owner-operators of the best place in the world, Milner Heritage Vineyard Winery, south of Kimball, Minnesota. I feel that the bill before us is an absolute necessity for us to change the wine landscape in Minnesota. First, we have to compete equally with our counterparts in other states, and that just simply isn't occurring right now. Secondly, the formation of a wine council is an imperative if we wish to see Minnesota really take the forefront of this cold, hardy grape and wine revolution. As currently stands, the tax paid on a bottle of wine that is sold through my winery would not be taxed equally but at a greater rate than those shipped in from other states. This seems inherently wrong and unjust to me. Why are some drought-ridden, fire-plagued, arsenic-ridden wines in California put in an economic superior position to one of your own? I guess that's kind of a question I would have. Minnesota is currently paying a substantial amount of money to have built arguably the very best grape breeding program in the country in the last 30 years, bar none. If those folks at Cornell tell you otherwise, let them know they don't know the world. We as a state-sponsored program have almost a virtual monopoly on truly cold, hardy, quality wine grapes on the market today, and that is something that all Minnesotans can really truly be proud of. Our grapes are shipped all over the world, every cold, hardy region, just as Honeycrisp is revolutionizing the apple industry. All the cold, hardy grapes in Minnesota are revolutionizing the wine industry. Minnesota is really being left behind. Why? A lot of it has to do with what we have. Our wines, as a result of that sales tax not getting paid, are essentially punished about 10%. And at the same time, everything brought in is not. That is just economically not fair. So we have a system where the state is supporting us with millions of dollars for the breeding program, but we're getting stifled economically. And that's just a very harsh reality for us. Because of the lack of collections of the sales tax, we're kind of getting taken to the wringers. There are far more Minnesota grapes planted in New York, for example, than there are here. Also, as was brought up previously, in Iowa. It is time to stop taking a two-faced view as a state toward Minnesota grapes and wine and really embrace a fair tax culture. A fair tax culture and the formation of a wine council. In spite of the mixed support, the Minnesota wine industry seems to be clawing ahead anyways. Overall, the numbers I have last seen have routinely been showing approximately about a 10% increase in production per year for quite a number of years. At this pace, we're essentially doubling our industry about every 7 years. So in spite of mixed support from the state, we are pushing ahead. We have accomplished quite a bit as it is, but we are in an industry transition. Many are moving from founding generations to sons and daughters. If we want to move from the NASA of today to the SpaceX of tomorrow, then surely we should at least make the playing field equal for our sons and daughters and speak with a defined voice of economic justice and equality. If we do not support the changes to this bill, then the Minnesota grape and wine industry will continue to be the comparable of the perpetually somehow not coming up with it in the end Vikings, instead of the come-from-behind Olympic curling champions of Duluth. I thought Minnesotans aspired to more. I don't know, what are we, Texans or something? So please stop giving those Texans with their flat, flabby wine a very sizable economic advantage over one of your own. Today we realistically have the capabilities to compete with the world. Give us a fair shake, and we will turn these valleys around all of our lakes and rivers into so much wine that Jesus wouldn't know what to do with. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Milner. And Representative Erdahl was here earlier. He couldn't stay, but he wanted us to say hello to you. So hello from Representative Erdahl. Sir, you're up next.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sure. My name is Jeff Seitler from St. Paul, Minnesota. And
co-owner and proprietor of Urban Forage Winery and Cider House. I want to voice my support for this bill. I think the MGGA has done an excellent job in this case of creating a bill that supports all types of Minnesota wineries, not just craft wineries, not just farm wineries. They've really done a great balanced job. So I have to say kudos to the MGGA for listening to everybody and including all the different types of wineries that are in the state in this bill. The second thing I'd like to point out is this bill also includes the Minnesota Cider Guild in the text of the bill as having a seat on this council. Cider is probably, it's a very fast-growing segment of the wine industry. If you're not familiar, cideries, at least those producing actual 100% apple juice cider, need to be licensed as wineries. And as such, we fall under this law, and we're really glad to see the work they've done, and I would very much support this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Zeitler. You're up next.
Hello, members of the committee. My name is Mike Tessner. My wife and I operate North Folk Winery up in northwest Chautauqua County, just outside of beautiful Stark, Minnesota. I want to speak in support of this bill, in particular, what the investment would mean with the Wine Council. Investing in expanding the market, getting more growers in the field, getting research done at the University of Minnesota that to improve the quality of wine, to improve the quality of the grapes being grown, all of which will improve our business. So I just wanted to speak in support of it, and thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kessner. Mr. McGrath.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Lee McGrath. I'm the managing attorney of the Institute for Justice. We are one of the nation's leading advocates for free trade, free markets, and the interstate movement of products. Thank you for the opportunity to testify against this bill. My colleagues represented Juanita Swedenberg, and we broke down the barriers in Michigan and New York for Minnesota shippers of wine and Virginia shippers of wine to ship directly into those states. Additionally, we have sued the state of Minnesota on two occasions, making it easier for farm wineries to take orders over the Internet, previously a violation of the First Amendment. And we are currently suing the state of Minnesota over a law that dictates the market share that wineries have to purchase from. And we're optimistic that a federal judge will rule in our favor, creating even more opportunities for Minnesota wineries. My colleagues and I oppose this bill for two reasons. One, that it is the very essence of regulatory capture, and two, that it is an unnecessary tax collection. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we don't need another board here in Minnesota. We don't need to grow the executive branch. Advocates for reform can knock on your door. I have lobbied across the country, and I can tell you that there is no door that swings open faster than those of your offices. It is easy to advocate, and there is no need to institutionalize a industry here in Minnesota when they can so easily come to you and ask for changes in the law. Secondly, this bill is unnecessary from a tax collection. On April 17th, the United States Supreme Court will hear South Dakota versus Wayfarer. And it is always, my crystal ball is no clearer than Representative McDonald's, but it's a pretty good bet when you have Anthony Kennedy saying that states should be able to collect sales tax. The Quill decision will likely be overturned. That has the support of past statements from Justice Thomas and Justice Gorsuch. And so, Mr. Chairman, you don't need this. You will soon have the ability to collect a sales tax on interstate shipments of wine, and even this license doesn't create the nexus necessary to achieve those ends. I would encourage the committee to reject this bill and not burden the state with yet another board.
Thank you, Mr. McGrath. Members, any questions? Is there anyone else in the audience that wants to speak for or against the bill?
I would just like to reiterate, we're not adding tax, we're just collecting a tax that's already supposed to be getting.
Thank you. Representative Luna, we'll give you the final word.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill, obviously, not only do we not have peace in the valley quite yet, we're working on it, but we're not quite ready to sit down and all enjoy a glass of wine together. But all the parties have agreed to talk. This was brought forth by the grape and wine growers to utilize any leadership they have in their group to develop their product for this generation and the next generation. I thought that was well said, and I look forward and hope for the support of the committee.
Thank you, Representative Looney. And with that, we will House File 1831 will be held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus liquor bill.
Thank you.
I know this is going to break a lot of hearts, but we're on to the last bill of the day. Mm-hmm. Representative Garofalo, come on down. Representative Garofalo, I will move House File 791. And I will also move the DE1 amendment, and the motion will be that we hold this over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Garofalo, I assume the DE is an author's amendment to get it in the shape you want it to be in?
That is correct, Mr. Chairman.
Those in favor of the adoption of the DE1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The bill is not in the shape you'd like it to be in. Representative Garofalo, to your bill. And welcome to the committee, by the way.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, Mr. Chairman, one issue. My understanding is that we were actually going to send it to taxes.
Hang on. I'll get back to you. Our tax chair isn't here, but okay. We will hold it over for possible inclusion. And if we're going to send it to taxes, we can do it tomorrow.
Okay. Mr. Chairman and members, what you have before you in the Delete All Amendment is a work of consensus and stakeholder involvement. My understanding is most, if not all, issues have been addressed. We have some testifiers here who can cover it with you. I will not give it the peace in the valley standard, but it is, if it's not there, it's pretty darn close. So, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. Mr. Pido, welcome back.
Good to be back. Consensus is what we have. This has been 3 years in the making. This type of legislation is not new. It is in many, many parts of the country and many states in the last 2-3 years. And there's consensus through hard work. The municipal stores support it, the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association, the Beer Association, the Teamsters, and the Wine Institute support this piece of legislation. Neutral are the common carriers, which is their common theme throughout the country. They are in compliance with what the law is. They know how to track data and things of that nature, so that it's not an issue in today's world. Neutral also, or who worked with us, were the technical assistants from the alcohol gambling enforcement in putting together the language and the enforcement language together. The bill brings tax party to wines coming in from other states. It's fairness to Minnesota wineries, fairness to retailers, and in a sense it's a jobs bill as well. The fact that the other states in the country, and certainly in the Midwest where this is growing more and more, is an indication of directly where this is going. The shipment of a product that is a regulated product. This state for wines has a primary source included in the law that basically says products coming from other states into the state of Minnesota, we have to know where they're going. So the fact that we would be getting this data would be quite helpful. As I had indicated before, there are occurrences where a product needs to be picked up, and from a public service aspect of it, I think this is a good piece of legislation as well.
Thank you, Mr. Pido. Members, any questions? Is there anyone else in the audience that wants to come down and speak for or against the bill? Come on down, sir. Go ahead, pull up a chair and start with your testimony.
Thank you. Once again, Irv Geary with the Minnesota Grape Growers Association. In as much as we appreciate the fact that this bill mirrors our current bill that we're asking for as well in the tracking and taxation, we all agree on that behalf. However, we would have to speak against this bill in that The taxation collected from this bill would put that money directly into the giant black hole of the general fund, which that may be good depending on where you sit. We feel like wine on tax coming in that currently has been collected should go to do something useful and constructive for the industry and the state. And we would urge the council to consider that we look at the creation of the wine council, the taxation will that place. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Geary. Members, any final questions? Representative Wooten.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Either to the author or to the chair. Has this bill gone to civil law? I noticed private data and data collection.
Representative Wooten, there are about five different committees that would like to have this bill come before it, and we need to double check. I thought I'd heard from Mr. Rubis and the tax chair that they didn't. Well, right now the motion is to hold the bill over for possible inclusion. If we hear differently from them, the first thing we'll do tomorrow, Representative Groffler, you don't need to come back. I'll just make the motion and send it wherever we think it needs to go first. But good question. We've had a number of committees that have had sort of the same question. And with that, we will hold House File 791 as amended over for possible inclusion in the omnibus liquor bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Groffler. And with that, members, we are adjourned.